From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Edson. It's recess. We're outside a tiny five-room schoolhouse in a remote village in the mountains of Guatemala. On this late summer day, children play in the dirt and grass outside the blue stucco building. Some are dressed in sweatshirts, others wearing indigenous clothing, red and white shirts with embroidered collars. Veteran reporter Maria Martin is here.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Father.
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 Mother.
Everywhere you look in this village, you see American flags painted on the sides of houses and flying in front of cinder block homes. Those houses are built with money sent home from abroad. This has been going on for generations.
¿Cuántos de ustedes tienen familia en Estados Unidos?
How many of you have family in the U.S., Maria asks.
Uno, dos,
sí.
Tres, cuatro.
Hands spring up.
Cinco, seis, muchos, ¿no?
I asked them if they also wanted to go north to the U.S.
¿Algunos de ustedes piensan en ir en Estados Unidos?
Yo, sí, yo.
Sí, queremos, yo, sí, queremos.
Most of them said yes. And I was struck by the reasons for wanting to go.
¿Por qué?
It wasn't to live a better life or to eat McDonald's or find the American dream. It was, they said, to pay their family's debts.
Debt. These eight-year-olds are worried about their family's debt. It's a story Maria heard often in her reporting in Guatemala.
This small village in the municipality of Todos Santos, Huehuetenango, is really poor. In this mostly indigenous province, the poverty rate is over 70%. People here have no opportunity to get ahead unless they have relatives in the States who can send them money. And because of this dire situation, migration has become almost a tradition, a rite of passage.
Maria has been coming to these communities for decades, living in Guatemala for more than 15 years.
I've always felt called to cover Central America because it seems that, except when there are wars or earthquakes, there's little interest in Guatemala or the Central American region. But when Trump was elected, I knew that migration would become a big political story and that despite his hardline immigration policies, people would continue to come north. And I wanted to know how that would play out in a place like this community of Todos Santos. That's where I met Soyla Calmo. She's a round-faced Maya woman who looks a little beaten down by life, and understandably so. I followed her family for the past 2 years. I've traveled to her village where she lives in a small house made of wood, metal sheeting, and dirt floors. It sits on top of a hillside with no road access and no running water. Her husband, Gilberto, who's here too, makes $6 a day when he can get work. But the work is sporadic. She feels completely abandoned by the government. Even now, the only future that Soyla and her family see is in the U.S. Soyla speaks in the Maya Mam language through a translator. She tells me about a dark day back in 2018. Her husband, Gilberto, had left the village to journey north to the U.S. He took their 8-year-old son, Franklin, just as Trump's family separation policy was at its peak. She tells me that when they got to the U.S., she found out that Franklin had been separated from his father. And for months, they had no idea what happened to him.
So, Maria, when we hear about these people fleeing to the U.S., the question that often gets asked is why? Why do they leave their countries, and why should it be the responsibility of the U.S. to take them in?
Well, the answer to that question is rooted in a history that goes back to the 1950s. In 1954, the CIA, under President Eisenhower, ousted Guatemala's first democratically elected president.
Atención, Guatemala. Atención, guatemaltecos. Esta es la emisora clandestina del Movimiento Libertador Guatemalteco desde algún lugar secreto de la República.
This was during the Cold War. The U.S. claimed that supporting military dictatorships prevented the spread of communism. These were regimes that the U.S. government helped put in power and funded with taxpayer money, and that committed massacres and genocide and were responsible for the disappearance of an entire generation of Guatemalans. Over 200,000 people, according to the UN, the majority indigenous Maya. It wasn't until 1999, after Guatemala was at peace, that President Bill Clinton traveled to the country and apologized.
I will reaffirm America's commitment to shed light on the dark events of the past, so that they are never repeated.
The U.S. had apologized, but the legacy of those violent conflicts remained. In the wake of those wars, corrupt politicians, not too different from military dictators, took power. They perpetuated a system where a handful of elites got much richer, and everyday Guatemalans were stuck in a cycle of poverty.
There was a moment in Guatemala when people experienced real hope and saw possibility for change.
That's right. It was a moment when the United Nations, the U.S., and Guatemala all came together in an effort to root out corruption and establish the rule of law in the country. They promised that everyone, no matter how rich or powerful, would face justice so that eventually people could live securely in a society where they could support their families. This effort was really unprecedented, but that dream was short-lived.
How that dream fell apart and who's responsible? That's what today's show is about. Reveals Aniancy Diaz-Cortez has spent the past year working with Maria to connect those dots. It's a story that shows how families like Soyla's intersect with some of the world's most powerful players, Joe Biden, Vladimir Putin, and Donald Trump. And it all revolves around an alleged quid pro quo between Trump and a president of Guatemala. Aniancy begins the story in South America.
I fly to Bogota, Colombia, to meet the man they call the Robert Mueller of Latin America. His name is Iván Velázquez, and he brought down some of the most powerful people in Guatemala. And I'm here to talk to him about it. We meet at a Best Western in the heart of one of the fanciest neighborhoods in the city. When he steps out of his taxi, he stands out. Sunglasses, a pressed shirt, good taste in shoes. We go up the elevator and settle down for a long conversation. So let me back up a little bit. In 2013, Velázquez was put in charge of this special United Nations body called the International Commission Against Impunity, better known by its Spanish acronym, CICIG. The UN and the Guatemalan government, with backing from the US, set up the commission to root out corruption in Guatemala. This was after decades of civil war and military rule there. As head of the CICIG, Velázquez could investigate anyone, even the president. I asked him if he had any idea what he was getting into when he took this job.
En realidad, yo no sabía la situación tan compleja que me esperaba.
He tells me he had no idea how complex the situation would be, even though he'd done similar work in Colombia, where he'd investigated 139 members of Congress and brought down the president for his links to paramilitary groups. So when the UN asked him to head the CICIG, he thought
puede ser una experiencia interesante.
It could be an interesting experience.
Y efectivamente fue una experiencia muy interesante.
And he says without a doubt, it was a very interesting experience. Not long after Velázquez started in 2014, Guatemala was at the center of an international migration crisis. 50,000 unaccompanied children arrived at the U.S.-Mexico border, and most of them came from Central America. So President Obama dispatched Joe Biden to Guatemala City, where Biden announced the U.S. was throwing a ton of money at CC. It was something he talked about that whole summer.
Here's the deal. There's a lot more we can and should do in the United States to deal with the root causes of this problem.
Root causes like violence and poverty. The U.S. believed that CC could help prevent those by going after corruption. Velasquez's first big target went all the way to the top. He authorized wiretaps that led to bribery and fraud charges against then-President Otto Pérez Molina, who's still in prison today. With Pérez Molina behind bars, Guatemala had to hold new elections. Enter political newcomer Jimmy Morales. Morales was best known for this weekly comedy show.
Pero qué bonito el lugar donde yo vivo, ¿verdad? ¿No le gusta?
It's so crass.
Yo soy la pitaya, el negrito más lindo de todos.
In almost every episode, he appears as a clown, but in blackface. And the show opens with Morales on a flying carpet. In the space of 1 minute, he makes fun of black people, blind people. He makes a crude joke about the female anatomy. This direct, bigoted appeal, it's what helped get him elected.
Pudimos ver también que él mismo fue una fabricación de los empresarios.
The business elite in Guatemala created Jimmy Morales. They paid for him to play the part.
Morales is a lot like Donald Trump. They're both very famous right-wing populists with no experience in government. Like Trump, Morales promised to drain the swamp. In fact, his campaign slogan was, ni corrupto ni ladrón, neither corrupt nor a thief.
Yo también confié.
I also believed that he could have good intentions, but...
Pero fui también engañado.
I too was fooled.
When Morales takes office, he has the support of the United States. At his inauguration in 2016, Vice President Joe Biden flies to Guatemala again. Biden walks down the stairs of Air Force Two, whips off his sunglasses, and waves to the crowd. President Morales is there, waiting to greet him on the tarmac. Later, the two world leaders meet at the Intercontinental Hotel.
I spend so much time.
The audio is a little hard to hear, but Biden is joking that he spends so much time in Central America, maybe he should run for office in Guatemala. Biden and Morales sit in heavy armchairs, a few feet apart, talking as the press cameras flash.
I want to compliment you.
Biden doesn't just congratulate Morales. He announces $750 million in USAID to Guatemala, El Salvador, and Honduras.
We are all in.
That money would go to the military, to economic development, and to CC to fight corruption. Just a week before Obama and Biden left office, Velasquez is photographed holding an oversized check from the U.S. Embassy for $7.5 million.
When you can investigate, justice becomes achievable. Citizens develop a civil conscience. They become aware of and respect the law.
Y también de temor en todos estos corruptos.
Sitting fear amongst the corrupt.
It was a dream team. Velasquez's UN office, President Jimmy Morales, and the Guatemalan Supreme Court pulling together with U.S. backing. Velasquez told me that for the first time, Guatemalan people were seeing the powerful being held accountable. And then...
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear
that I will faithfully...
Donald Trump takes office. By then, things had begun to unravel between Velasquez and Morales. It starts with breakfast. 500 breakfast, actually. Velasquez was investigating a case of fraud. Someone had charged the government $11,000 for breakfast that were never served. So Velasquez reaches out to Morales.
And I told the president, did you hear about this investigation? Your son's name appeared and it seems he has participated in fraud.
Debería presentarse su hijo.
I think your son should go before a judge.
Several members of Morales' family were implicated, It wasn't a lot of money, but Velasquez says that's not the point.
Hemos visto, hemos conocido siempre en el país.
What we have known and seen always in this country is that justice does not reach the powerful. And our stance was serious. Nobody is above the law.
Velasquez urges Morales to go on national television and condemn corruption in his own family. And Morales does.
Mi esposa y yo respaldamos plenamente a nuestro hijo.
With his wife by his side, Morales tells the country that they support their family and that he also believes justice should run its course.
Respetamos a las instituciones responsables de impartir justicia en nuestro país.
But that speech, it's not enough for Velasquez. He wants the president's family members to stand before a judge. And the breakfast, well, they were part of a much larger investigation. In fact, Velasquez was looking to impeach Morales for campaign finance violations. Morales was not okay with that.
Pueblo de Guatemala, como ya lo he manifestado en mi mensaje.
So Morales posts a video on Twitter that ends up on national television where he denounces Velasquez.
He declares me persona non grata. Oh, and he also demands that I leave Guatemala, effective immediately.
But Velasquez refuses to leave the country and won't disband CSIC.
I think that in this situation,
se cayeron las máscaras.
The masks came off.
Que ya la gente era como era.
Everyone was who they really were.
The people of Guatemala take to the streets to support Velasquez. But then the Guatemalan Congress gets involved. Lawmakers declare Morales immune from prosecution. CSIC is allowed to keep going with its other anti-corruption work, but Morales is off limits. So Morales and Velasquez, they're kind of at a stalemate. But there's another campaign happening outside of Guatemala, one that will eventually bring down Velasquez.
After the break, Aniansi takes us 3,000 miles from Guatemala to a coffee shop in San Francisco. There, she meets a foreign agent who wants to topple Velasquez.
We wanted the CSIC out.
And we head back to the hills of rural Guatemala, where families like Soilas still dream of a better life in the States. This is Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.